You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our readings from Isaiah and Julian today are all pretty straightforward. All of them point to clear examples of God either being recognized as or claiming to be like a mother. The imagery from Isaiah is of God as a comforting mother, a nursing mother, and as a woman in labor. Now, this may be surprising to those who've been raised on a Zeus-like image of the divine, but these aren't the only places in Hebrew scripture where God claims traditionally maternal or feminine characteristics. Taken out of context, Julian's claim of God being a mother can be jarring to some, but I think her concepts are not only well-grounded in biblical imagery and inspired by the thought of a number of other mystics, but were also a response to a much-needed boost to motherhood's pandemic-ravaged reputation.
Our words of wisdom are from Isaiah 66:13, 49:15, Isaiah 42:14, and Julian's Revelation of Divine Love, chapter 59.
From Isaiah, as a mother comforts her child, so I will comfort you. You shall be comforted in Jerusalem. Can a woman forget her nursing child or show no compassion for the child of her womb? Even these may forget, yet I not forget you. For a long time, I have held my peace. I have kept myself still and restrained myself. Now I will cry out like a woman in labor. I will gasp and pant.
From Revelations of Divine Love, as truly as God is our Father, so truly is God our Mother. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
If you think people get upset over the removal of Confederate statues or the banning of the Confederate flag, just try suggesting that God is anything other than a red-blooded, testosterone-fueled, hyper-masculine dude. You know, the big guy, the man upstairs, our Father who art in heaven. Most of us raised in 20th century America were conditioned from a very young age to believe that God was, is, and always will be an objectively male being. Any deviation from that narrow-minded, rudimentary, and clearly unverifiable certainty was tantamount to heresy. But despite their influence having been eroded over time, there's evidence throughout history of powerful goddesses, female deities, and even otherwise masculine gods being depicted with feminine characteristics. If you look closely, even the Bible itself, which, remember, represents the viewpoint of only a few hundred years of primitive Middle Eastern culture, represents the divine in distinctly feminine ways. Not only are the Jewish ideas of wisdom, chokmah, and its Christian counterpart, Sophia, distinctly feminine, they are major components of God's identity and creative powers. And as today's passages from Isaiah clearly show, that tough guy God has really no problem being represented as a comforting mother, a nursing mother, or as a woman in labor. Now, for pointing out these blatantly obvious details, an interfaith gathering called the Reimagining Conference created a firestorm of controversy back in 1993. Meeting in Minneapolis from all over the world, just over 2,000 mostly women clergy, laypeople, and feminist theologians met for discussions that led to the firing of at least one leading woman denominational leader, threats from traditionally minded Christians, and turmoil in churches all over the world. Aimed at encouraging churches to address injustices to women worldwide, and promote equal partnership with men at all levels of religious life, the conference made it clear that traditional Christianity's male-centered language and images have stifled women in leadership and contributed to the idea that men were superior to women. At the time, I was a freshly minted pastor who, having been indoctrinated in seminary into the idea that actually reading the Bible was a good thing, I was fully on board with the reimagining agenda. Of course women are equal to men. Of course Christianity's language and theology is archaic and exclusive. Of course the idea that God is a cosmically sized bearded man on a throne is ridiculous. But was I in for a surprise? Turns out that there were a lot of people whose whole identity was wrapped up in just the opposite. God is demonstrably male. Women are objectively inferior to men. And referring to mankind as humanity is surely the first step towards the fall of Western civilization. And women as clergy? Never! Roman Catholic theologian Brian W. Harrison objected to efforts at inclusivity that made churches thick with the cloying scent of feminism and whined about being subjected to the ideological harassment represented by the unwanted presence of women at the altar. And he's one of the nicer ones. The anger and irrational fear I and my clergy colleagues faced for even suggesting reimagining our faith drove people from our churches and was part of the larger cultural rift that is still playing out in our divided country and our soon-to-split denomination. The bottom line, some people developmentally are simply unable to think metaphorically or poetically. Their religious lives are dominated by literal thinking, and their spiritual worldview is stunted by fear of change and an obligation to defend outdated ideas. One thing you will definitely not find them doing is reimagining anything to do with their faith. And who knows? Maybe early in life, Julian of Norwich was like that herself. But then she had a transformative near-death experience. Maybe she was like those anti-vaxxers you see on the news giving testimonials from their ICU beds. Don't be like me. Get vaccinated. You don't want to go through what I've been through. The showings Julian passed down to us are essentially visions from a medieval ICU bed. Visions from a woman transformed. They are testimonials to a totally new way of seeing life, the world, and of understanding the divine. We've already touched on her reimagining nature and God as one, and on her embrace of the via negativa, the darkness, as a necessary part of one's spiritual development. But then, in a patriarchal society steeped in sacrosanct medieval theology, Julian had the audacity to dare to reimagine God as both father and mother. She even called Jesus our true mother, from whom we receive our beginning, our true being, protection, and love. But she wasn't alone. A generation before Julian, German mystic Meister Eckhart said, "The essence of God is birthing." What does God do all day long? He asked. God lies on a maternity bed, giving birth. Eckhart continues with the metaphor and asks, what good is it to me if Mary gave birth to the Son of God 1,400 years ago, and I don't give birth to the Son of God in my person, time, and culture? Eckhart believed that all of us are meant to be mothers. Our work is birthing Christ into history. Mechthild of Magdeburg declared that God is not only fatherly, God is also a mother who lives her loved child from the ground to her knee. And 100 years before Mechtild, Hildegard of Bingen was what Matthew Fox calls a Trojan horse of the divine feminine, sneaking into her writings all kinds of codes and imagery of the divine feminine, including images of roundness and of being hugged and encircled by the mystery of God. She describes the Creator as carrying creation, as a mother carries her infant in the womb. Julian's emphasis on the motherhood of God may have had what author Brendan Doyle calls an almost prophetic counterpoint to the culture of her time. During the pandemic, it seems that the survival rate for children was only 1 out of 3. In order to spare themselves the agony of almost certain separation and grief, mothers were afraid to become too close to their children. So as the role of mother was downplayed, Julian went full mama bear on the zeitgeist of her time and, using the image of God as mother, tried to redeem the word and concept of mother for her day and age. She wrote, "Only he who is our true mother and source of all life may rightfully be called by this name. But whenever a human mother nurtures her child with all that is beautiful and good, it is God the mother who is acting through her." And for Julian, this nurturing role is not limited to women, but is expected of men as well, whether they're literally mothers or not. One of the primary characteristics of motherhood that Julian promoted was compassion. Now, I don't know if she knew Hebrew, but I suspect she at least knew that the Hebrew word for compassion, rachamim, is derived from the root word for womb, accounting for her claim that compassion protects, increases our sensitivity, gives life, and heals. And it is a kind and gentle property that belongs to motherhood in tender grace. "Compassion," she wrote, "is a sweet, gracious working in love, mingled with abundant kindness. For compassion works at taking care of us and makes all things become good." For Julian, the test of compassion, and therefore ideal motherhood, came not when things are going well, but when darkness descends and troubles occur. Mothers with compassion see us through falling and failing, fearing and dying. The compassion of ideal motherhood persists in the hardest of times. And if those aren't characteristics of the divine, then what is? Another characteristic of mothering for Julian is service. She writes, "A mother's service is nearest, readiest, and surest." And who, wonders Julian, is more near, more ready, or more sure than God? As Julian sees it, God is the ultimate mother, showering us with a motherhood of mercy and grace, bringing us back to our source, where we were created by the motherhood of love and mother love that never leaves us. And that's not all. As I mentioned before, Julian doesn't leave Jesus out of the picture. She often speaks about the motherhood of Jesus and Jesus' maternal qualities. She assures us that Jesus is our mother, brother, and liberator, who offers a profound example of the steadfast generosity of mother's love. Dr. Yolanda Pierce, one of those scary feminist theologians, used to be a professor at Princeton. She's now the first woman to be dean of the Howard University Divinity School. She writes, "Long before I became familiar with the academic debates concerning calling God mother, debates that I'm now currently a part of as a professor at Princeton Theological Seminary, I was being raised in a household where I instinctively understood that the divine presence was manifest in the loving hands and arms of mothers, and most especially in the life of my grandmother who raised me. My grandmother's kitchen was a theological laboratory where she taught me how to love people just as naturally as she taught me to make peach cobbler and buttermilk biscuits. I watched and listened as she ministered to the sick and the lost, with a Bible in one hand and a freshly baked pound cake in the other, despite having no official ministry role. I knew that if God was real, if God truly loved me as a parent loves a child, then God was also mother and not only father. Only years of dogma and doctrine force you to unlearn what you know to be true in your own heart, demanding father as the only acceptable appellation and concept for God. Are you ready to unlearn the dogma and doctrine, obscuring what you know in your heart makes perfect sense? Reverend Michelle Terry writes, "As we expand our understanding of God, we grow in our relationship with God. It becomes easier to see ourselves as God's beloved treasure and the tasks of our lives as God's work." And what is that work? Compassion, service, nurturing, unconditional love. What Julian identified as not solely the domain of, but primary characteristics of ideal motherhood. As truly as God is our Father, so truly God is our mother. As our guide to Julian, Matthew Fox, puts it, to be a mother is to be a source of life. And since divinity is the source of all life, divinity is preeminently a mother. Those who oppose the notion of God as mother will say, well, Jesus called God Father, or Jesus was a guy and Jesus is God. Okay, if that's where you're coming from, then we've got some remedial Christianity to review sometime, but don't have time to deprogram you today. Some will also argue that God is beyond gender and try to use only neutral language, making God into an it. Anything really other than using the more feminine metaphors and analogies we've touched on, like God as a nursing mother, or God as a midwife, and God as one who gives birth. The question is, how narrow is your vision? Can you get over your conditioning to embrace a more full spectrum of possibilities? God is creator and sustainer. God is protector and defender. God is our light. God is our rock. God is father, and God is mother. Our pitifully inadequate human words and metaphors can never do justice to the infinite ways human beings experience the divine. And Julian knew this deep down, and you probably know it too. In her time, when nature was vilified, when motherhood was disparaged, Julian advocated for a healthy balance, embracing God and nature as one, and returning to the values, virtues, and actions of ideal motherhood, characteristics embodied by the God who birthed creation itself. The divine feminine is calling us to embrace the wonder of birthing new life, of nurturing one another with compassion and grace, and opening ourselves to an appreciation that as truly as God is our Father, so truly is God our Mother. All will be well. All will be well. All manner of things will be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.